Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's For Women. You are not 9 to 5 and neither are we. Conveniently open online 365 days per year, 24 hours per day.
A new play, It's Always Your Bleeding Own, is a love story with an edge to Dublin's inner city. It's written by award-winning actor and playwright and all-round genius Thomas Cain Byrne and stars his best friend and fellow actor, the stunning and brilliant Erica Rowe. Think I like these people? They together set up their own theatre company with a mission to make theatre accessible to all. Thomas and Erica, good morning.
Good morning.
I'm so delighted to see the two of you.
Yeah,
it's
you too.
I actually, just before we get in, I went to see Deadly Cuts on my own because I knew Angelina and I knew you. But now I've met you and I was like, I know you. Deadly Cuts is one of my favourite movies. I've watched it about 10 times. Yeah. It just cracks me up.
We just had a ball making that as well.
Yeah, it was like your whole friend group in the cast. Literally always it was laugh. So good.
If you haven't seen Deadly Cuts, watch it tonight. It's actually deadly. Great title, Thomas. It's Always Your Bleeding Known. What's the play about?
Oh, God.
No pressure.
So it's the third part of a trilogy, which is called the St. Mary's Mansions trilogy. But it's a standalone play. You don't have to have seen the first two parts, which were Say Nothing to No One, and Well, That's What I Heard. But
names, by the way.
I wanted all little kind of inner city proverbs, you know what I mean? Yeah. But in Say Nothing to No One, there was this character called Keane who was... He got a place in Central St. Martin's, the fashion school in London, and in order to pay his fees, he was basically a luxury goods shoplifter, essentially. But the Robin Hood of haute couture, they would call him.
Yeah. But I actually knew somebody like that, but go on. Yeah.
We all do. We revisit him after coming out of college, and he's working for this big fashion house called the House of Ulysses, and and he's kind of lost his creative mojo. So he gets a call from Erica's character, Amber Green, and she's this well-known gangland princess, and kind of all her luck has run out, and she's marrying this unsavoury character. Well, she's the unsavoury character, but we love her in the end. Anyway, and she's trying to entice him back to Dublin to make a wedding dress for her. And all of his kind of creative mojo has been inspired by D1 and stuff like that, and he's kind of lost it. So he's like, maybe I'll kill two birds with one stone. I'll go back to D1. I'll be inspired again, and I'll make the dress for Jigglypuff, as he called her.
It's called the Jigglypuff.
And along with many other names.
There's a lot of comedy in it, Erica.
There is. Yeah, it's hilarious. It's a love letter to Dublin. And Dublin's ever-changing city, whether you like it or love it. Yeah. And the characters in it, they're all quite unsavoury characters, really. But I think that's what Thomas does brilliantly. He writes these characters that you really shouldn't like, but you come out at the end and you're like, oh my God, I love them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that actually, yeah, because you've even a couple of things you've said there, I'm like, I know that person, I've met that person. Yeah. I know that person. We'll just get this out of the way because I want to mention that you feature the riots.
Yeah.
And I think that's a clever thing to do as well, actually. Why did you want to do that?
Well, do you know what? The play's not about the riots per se, but just I think it was draft three or very early on in the process, I was like, I can't write about Dublin today and treat characters who are at the centre of Dublin and not feature them. You know what I mean? No, they're not as I said, the whole thing is not based around it or anything like that, but they do feature in it. And what I've done is they're from three different perspectives. So for example, Lloyd Cooney plays the character Dazzy Whelan, who Erica's character is involved with. I won't ruin the play. But he was really affected. We call him a yup bro in recovery. And he was affected.
Slow that down now. A yup bro.
A yup bro in recovery.
Give me that. So, what's that?
He's just one of the lads from around the way. And he's one of those kind of self-therapizing TikTokers who's like, trauma, which is his kind of line throughout.
But I'm loving this.
So he's affected by the riots because the incident that incited the riots, he was really affected by after something that happened to him a few years previously. Keane sees them from BBC television in London, which I thought was kind of a unique perspective to see your city born in from and not be in the city or have been there for a while. And then Amber is just oblivious to them and is so busy with snaring her fiancé to marry her that I think they just go over our head, do
yeah.
they?
Yeah.
So yeah, literally. I wanted to kind of give three unique perspectives
Love
to them,
that.
You know?
Yeah, and also they did happen and it was a very strange time for us all.
Yeah, exactly.
It was the weirdest yeah. time ever. And
exactly.
I was actually sitting in this seat the next day
yeah.
and I did my whole opener about it yeah. and what I had experienced. I came out of a cinema into it. And
yeah.
Yeah, so yeah. I think it was. We can't deny that it happened. And
of
we
course.
Have to address what, why it happened.
Yeah. Exactly, and we deal with the kind of yeah. classism surrounding them in the aftermath.
Yeah, yeah, and how like working that. Class people were vilified kind of on social media.
Yeah.
And it was people from all around the country that came to Dublin that night
yeah.
To for the
it was,
riots,
a, it was
yeah.
a certain section of society it, that
yeah.
came from everywhere,
exactly,
100%.
Yeah.
But that aside, the play is great crack.
It's, yeah.
not as, it's not as somber as we're making it sound, I
no,
promise.
No, it doesn't sound somber, but I think your perspectives are really good because it has to have a political feeling to it as well.
Yeah.
100%.
That's what art does really
yeah.
well. It talks to us about our different perspectives.
100%.
What like, before we dive into, I mean, you've got loads of nicknames in this and I love all that.
Yeah.
Amber has many nicknames. What would you love to see done to Dublin City now? There's a lot of positive talk about what we need to do to fix. I live in Dublin City as well, as you know,
yeah.
and I'm very passionate about it. And I have a list as long as my arm. What would you like to see done?
Well, there's a thing that they keep repeating in the play and it's kind of a common thread, but it's just three simple things. Lower the rents, open the clubs, let us have a pop.
I love
you
it.
Know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
like, I just feel like the answer to everything is closing off public space and closing down cultural spaces. And I'm like, we've never needed those things more. It's therapy almost. No,
yeah.
not almost. It's therapy for people, you
yeah.
know?
To come together and have a dance.
Yeah,
yeah, and like we all know how many derelict buildings there is in Dublin at the moment. And if we could just, as you say, open them up and
yeah.
free up space for people in the arts at all different sides
yeah.
of the society, that would be great.
100%.
Yeah.
And I feel like with all the hotels and stuff, we're so dead set with facilitating tourists that we're forgetting about the people who actually live there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And who are responsible for the running of it and
yeah.
are paying taxes in it. And, you know.
When I look up on Connell Street now, all I see is potential. Really, there's so much potential
yeah.
there. So we need to get moving on it now.
Yeah.
And I think your play is making a big statement about it. Amber, tell
yeah.
me about Amber.
So, yeah, Amber is like this gangland princess. And
love her already.
Yeah, she's
she
hilarious.
Yeah.
yeah. And she is, there's a lot of kind of stuff in the play about her and about how much she kind of worries about her weight and stuff, about stuff that women shouldn't really have to be worrying about. And there's a lot about that. She's... yeah, and she's getting married to this man called Big Mick. Big Mick out of Ra.
He gets the full title
he gets
every
the full,
time.
Yeah. And yeah, he's 59, has a big red face and is always sweating, but she is going to get married to him anyway.
And I love, like, it's so funny and juvenile. Big Mick out of the Rat, just because he's from Belfast.
Just because
yeah.
He's not even in the Rat.
Yeah, yeah, just because he's yeah. Belfast. What's her motivation?
Her motivation is to make a life for herself.
Yeah.
Yeah. She feels like she's the laughing stock of everything. She's the butt of every joke and she wants to prove that she is not. She's not simple. She's stunning.
And yeah, and do you relate to her in any way?
A lot, Brendan. A lot.
The shade.
Funny mentioning that. I'm a big fan. Yeah. Thomas describes you as his muse, Erica. That's lovely, isn't
oh,
it?
Oh, that is lovely.
We'll be killing each other in the taxi
yeah,
on the way back.
What do you make of that?
Yeah, no, it's lovely. Like, and obviously I'm biased, but I think he's the best writer in Dublin of our generation. And yeah. There's no one that I'd rather be doing this with.
So you're from Sean McDermott Street.
Yeah.
You're from
Ballyfermot. Yeah.
Yeah. And you set up Breadline together.
Yeah.
Specifically with a task in hand, right?
Yeah.
To make theatre more accessible.
Yeah. We went to Bulalli together and we had left and stuff like that. Then I went to Gaiety and Erica went to Bow Street. But I bumped into her beforehand in, she had done a show on the Cheese Block or something like that. And we were in the Hairy Lemon, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And I was just like, let's just
from the Cheese Block to the Hairy Lemon.
Exactly.
It's a great little city.
But yeah, I was like, how sick are you of seeing people up there like mutilating their accents and like telling our experience as like a secondary source, you know? So I was like,
but just don't gloss over that. Come back into that a little bit. I like that. So you were just sick. I read a great line. You're sick of Arabellas and Funtons doing working class accents.
Yeah.
And possibly quite badly.
Yeah.
So go on.
Yeah. Just like, I don't know, like Bortes and skirts and stuff like that. And it was like, it just annoyed me like that our area was the worst place in the world until they wanted to pull from it. And there's like countless things set in the flats by people who've never been in a block of flats in their life. You know what I mean? So yeah, we just wanted to as we said, like our unofficial tagline was theatre by knit bags, for knit bags, about knit bags.
Oh, very good.
Yeah, and making theatre as accessible to the working class people as the cinema.
Yeah.
Very yeah, good. Like I know a lot of people that hadn't even been to the theatre until they came to see one of our plays from our area. So yeah, like yeah. I'm very proud of that. Most of our audience is a predominantly working class audience as well, or just a non-theatre going audience. So yeah.
When so what year was this you set Breadline up?
2017.
Yeah. Oh, really? That long?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Well,
okay.
This is our first kind of Arts Council funded play. Everything
Congratulations.
Else.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, everything else we've done, we've done on a wish and a prayer, really.
Yeah, and a few guarantees from some kind theatre directors.
You are, I've seen a lot of your work, Thomas, and you are remarkably adaptable. I've seen you play a posh person, a thug, a camp person. I've seen you play so many things. Do you feel you ever get typecast by your accents?
Oh yeah.
Do you?
Thomas doesn't really as much as me. If
you do big time.
I do big time.
Tell me about that.
I suppose like I don't really know. Like it's just it's something I used to get really annoyed by it.
Did you?
Yeah, I did, because I was like, there's more to me than that, and then I kind of just got. Said to myself, actually, do you know what? I love playing these characters. I know I can play more than that. If I need to perfect them all before I break it, then so be it.
Really?
Yeah. I would like to be obviously seen for more parts, and I think sometimes people's minds are very close-minded when they meet you in person and they're like, oh, this is what this person is, and they can't do any more, and then they see you doing something else and they're like, oh, actually, they can. So, I think it's just a lot of tunnel vision from people sometimes.
There's a big judgment with Dublin accents.
Yeah, and I think, especially for working class women, I think working class men can kind of push past that a little bit because it's kind of sexy to be common when you're a man. But if
common,
you're,
I haven't heard that
I
in
know,
years.
Yeah, but if you're a woman who is common, it's not sexy. It's seen as a little bit dirty sometimes, I think.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. And how do you rail against that then professionally? That's kind of amazing. That just, you set up your own company and do it yourself?
Yeah, it's like if that's the way we're going to be cast, why not make these characters the characters that we know, we love, the people, the voices that we wouldn't usually hear on the stage? Let's do it, and why not?
That's brilliant.
Yeah.
Fair play.
Yeah, and like have it be a primary source for once, you know what I mean? Coming from the horse's mouth as opposed to someone's idea or impression of what working class Dublin is, you know.
Have you ever sat through a performance and thought, got angry about it? You don't obviously don't name any
How
names.
How long is this slot?
Yeah, you don't name any names, obviously, but you obviously have seen performances where you've gone. Well, it's like when Americans do Irish accents, even. You can just hear in the tones are kind of wrong often, yeah. But even on the script front, you know, have you been frustrated by working class scripts not written by working class people?
A little bit, yeah. Like, I'm not saying you have to be from this, but you know when you know just the research hasn't been done and this, like, I don't know, this is like someone from God knows where is just a bit obsessed with, like, gangland or Dublin, and it's just all of these tropes and you're like, give your head a wobble, write what you know. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I've got a text here. Hi to Thomas, break a leg with your new play, love from Liam's mum, Claire.
Oh my God, it's my friend Liam Bixby. Hi Claire, how are you?
That's very sweet. So we can't talk about inner city Dublin without talking about Barry. He's a big inspiration, isn't he? Barry Cogan, his success is phenomenal.
Oh, amazing.
And you've worked with him.
Yeah, we used to go. So we were in school together in Larkin. He did fifth and sixth year there. And then
I'm talking about Barry Cogan, by the way, just in case you didn't know what we're talking about. Yeah.
I love that you said Cogan as well. Yeah. A lot of people say Cogan and stuff like that. And you're like, no, G.
Cogan,
like, the G. But yet we were in the Belvedere Youth Club together in DMD Productions. Yeah, so we did we did Hairspray together and stuff like that. He was Link Clark and I was Edna Turnblad, the mother.
Were you?
So yeah, he's, you know what?
There's just nothing you can't do.
He's just a great guy. He's been through a lot. He deserves the world. And it's amazing to see, you know, as Erica always says, like, even in Eternals, which was the Marvel film, seeing a superhero with our accent was just so powerful. And it's going to inspire a whole generation of up and coming kids.
Oh,
you
yeah,
know?
He kept his accent.
Yeah. That's unheard of. It was so special to see, you know.
That really is, isn't it?
Yeah. And then when he dedicated his BAFTA speech to the kids of the area, I was gone.
Were
I was
you?
Bawling. Yeah.
Really? Yeah, because it's really special, because if you can see it, you can be it and all that. 100%. Erica, you've been doing plays in the Abbey and you're in Bad Sisters.
Yeah, I was just a small part.
Doesn't matter.
Season one.
Doesn't matter.
No small parts, just small actors. You know what they say?
How was the experience?
Oh, yeah, it was great. And I've worked with Sharon before in another film herself that I did, that Claire Dunrow and Sharon produced it. I just think she is a genius. I'd love to work with her again, yeah.
Why do you think what was she like on set and stuff? Because she's directing, writing and starring.
Yeah, she actually wasn't on set the day that I was there, but I've met her like a few times before. And she's incredible. She has mad mind, and I just think that makes for a brilliant TV.
And Jessica Lang, just dropped that little name in there as well. You did a film with Jessica Lang.
Yeah, I did a film with Jessica Lang and Ed Harris last year, was it? Yeah. Long Day's Journey and Tonight. It's an adaptation of a play by Eugene O'Neill. So, that was amazing. And Jessica Lang is just someone that I have. She just plays strong women and she's formidable. I just think she's amazing.
What's that like when you're on set with somebody you've been a fan of?
I actually couldn't speak for the first few days when I met Jessica Lang. It took me a few days to settle into it and I still couldn't fully be myself because I was so starstruck, and I didn't think I would get starstruck by anybody. It was mad.
Did she give you any tips? Did you learn anything from her?
Oh, it was like a masterclass in acting every day. Just going on set with people like that, you know, who have done so much in their career and just seeing how they work a set, and I was obviously so nervous going in.
You know when you do something like that with somebody you're a fan of, did you go home and creep on them online?
Oh, start watching their videos, yeah.
Start looking at their work. Yeah. Have you worked with anybody that you've done that on?
It was more a whole experience. So Lisa McGee wrote a cameo for me in the last season of Derry Girls.
Oh, yes.
And I swear to you, like, Erica will tell you, it's a neurodivergence in me. When I like something, I like hyperfixate. So I knew it inside and out. I was like a competition winner on the set. Like, it was so, like, I was just absolutely obsessed with the whole thing.
Like that.
Like quoting characters that were just mentioned and weren't in it and all. And they were like, oh, I don't even remember that. And, you know, like, yeah, I was obsessed.
Oh, wow. Was that good fun, though?
Oh, it was great fun. It was great fun.
I'm
obsessed with Lisa.
You guys are incredible. Your energy's amazing. What's next? What are you up to next?
What are we up to next?
We have a good few things lined up with Breadline that we're, like, developing. We're developing a musical with Gemma Dunleavy called He Sits of a Tuesday. Thomas has wrote the play and Gemma's writing the music.
Really?
Yeah. And
that's exciting.
It's about this... these six women who are waiting for a politician in his office who never shows up. What do you call it? The Leave It With Me?
The Leave It With Me culture of kind of the inner city and stuff like that. But
I get back to you.
Yeah, and he never comes, and like and they don't give him a name. And I was very thinking, in this world, I don't want us to see any men. You know what I mean? Oh. So I want it to be about the women. And as the play progresses, it becomes less and less about him and more about their kind of intertwining stories.
Yeah, wow. So go back to what we're doing tonight now. So give us the big plug now. Yeah. Tell us
so
what's happening.
We are doing a play called It's Always Your Bleeding Own. It's on in the Project Arts Centre.
So just for anybody who mightn't get that, I'm assuming It's Always Your Bleeding Own is reference to your family. Or
I suppose it has loads of meanings, but it's kind of like, you know when you're like, I suppose, you know that saying, like, your own are the worst, and it's kind of like no one knows you like your own. So when you're arguing with them, they know what buttons to press.
Yes.
And like, no one can kind of get to you like your own. And it's kind of a double-edged sword, like good and bad, you know?
Yeah, because there's also, it's always your own who are the ones who are always going to help you as well.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's kind of good and bad. But yeah, we run until the 14th, and it features an amazing cast of Erica Lloyd Cooney and the amazing Cameron Hogan. It's his first gig out of drama school.
Oh, wow.
And he is just amazing. I can't wait for everyone to see him.
It's Always Your Bleeding Own is that my family would kill each other, but if someone knocked on the front door, everybody behaved.
Yeah.
There'd be murder, but mine
wouldn't behave.
So you're previewing tonight in the Project Arts Centre in Dublin. It's Always Your Bleeding Own, and it runs until the 14th of December.
Yes.
Yeah.
You're an absolute joy. Thomas Kenborn and Erica Rowe, thank you so much for
coming
in.
Thank you.
Thanks, Brendan.
Break a leg.
Thanks very much.
Take a break.